time to enlighten up and health yourself at the same time. It's Natural Solutions Radio with Sir Eliezer Ben Joseph, traditional naturopath.
Good morning, good morning, and be proud of yourself. A little excitement is in order for however you found yourself here at Natural Solutions Radio. There are no accidents. Here you are knowing and believing truth to always be there when you need it. This is the show where you can learn to health yourself and enlighten up at the same time. You're about to enter the gateway into the world of natural health and freedom technologies with alternative and complementary therapies, all representing the leading edge of natural medicine and social commentary today. Enjoy the information and entertainment you find here at Natural Solutions Radio. About 40 years ago, there was a fascinating anomaly in the metabolism of cancer cells that was discovered, and they are dependent on large amounts of the essential amino acid methionine. And cancer cells use methionine to produce sulfurous gases that fuel their growth. Well, non-cancerous cells can thrive without methionine, yet most types of cancer cells, including melanoma and liver cancers, or hepatocellular carcinoma, which are liver cancers, colon cancers, breast cancers, ovarian cancers, prostate cancers, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, and all of these types of cancers stop replicating and die when they're starved of methionine, the amino acid, essential amino acid. Now, this observation led teams of researchers to experiment with very low methionine diets in the prevention and treatment of cancer. And several animal studies utilizing a methionine-restricted diet have reported the inhibition of cancer growth and the extension of healthy lifespan. In contrast, normal tissues are relatively resistant to methionine restriction. These observations led to clinical trials of dietary methionine restriction for adults with advanced cancers. And findings from these trials indicate that dietary methionine restriction is a safe and feasible for the treatment of patients with advanced cancers. So anyone with cancer should be limiting, needs to be limiting methionine intake in their diets. The question becomes, how do you know which foods to limit or avoid? It's quite simple, really, because methionine is found abundantly in all animal proteins, particularly chicken and fish and dairy products and red meats and eggs. And they all contribute substantially to the average person's intake, while plant foods generally have much lower levels of methionine. That's the reason you'll find that most cancer programs are vegetarian. Plant proteins, especially those derived from legumes or nuts, tend to be lower in methionine than normal animal proteins. Whole food vegan diets can be quite low in methionine while supplying abundant nutrition for health with the B12 supplementation. You do need to supplement with B12. And the B12 that we use is either a hydroxycobalamin or a methylcobalamin. And then for those who have already developed cancer, combining a methionine-restricted diet, even with chemotherapy drugs, lead to better outcomes than chemotherapy alone. And this is now confirmed in numerous studies. And given the large and growing body of research on methionine-restricted diets as a safe, effective, and prevention and treatment strategy for most types of cancers, it's disappointing that none of the cancer charities, none of those, promote these methionine-restricted diets. And the actually, most of the charities recommend eating red meat. The American Cancer Society recommends eating red meat 3 to 4 times per week, and eating chicken or fish on the other night. So they're eating animal protein all 7 days a week. adding a weak suggestion to try a vegetarian alternative sometimes without giving any information on what these diets are or why they might be preferable. The methionine-restricted diets are usually listed dead last when it comes to describing risk factors for breast cancer. They don't even mention it in the American Cancer Society. American Breast Cancer, they merely suggest eat 5 servings of vegetables and 2 servings of fruits per day. And advice has been shown to be completely ineffective at cancer prevention. Drug companies, who are the main beneficiaries of the money donated by these charities, and they're funded by public donation and government money, aka really the tax dollars that you pay, are now scrambling to develop drugs that deplete cancer cells of methionine. And these drugs, if they ever pass safety and efficacy testing and reach the bedsides of cancer patients, will reap huge profits for the drug companies who will hold patent rights on these drugs, despite the fact that dietary restriction of methionine has been shown to work. So what works to help stop cancer? A high nutrient density diet that is restricted in methionine. And something you will never hear from the cancer industry. So that's personally what bothers me, is you don't hear these kinds of research from the cancer industry. And you can go and get to the government agency. I think it's www.gov.com or .gov. But you can go to the list, the FDA or the Food and Drug Administration. They make lists of all foods, now, every food you can think of. And they make a list with every single nutrient that those foods contain. And you can ask on the computer, and what I did is I printed it out, and it's color-coded, and I give that to every single client that I see that has cancer, and with the lowest methionine rated foods, and then those are green, and then it changes color to the higher methionine foods. Complete restrictions on the essential amino acid methionine. So we do it as a modified ketogenic diet that is low in methionine, very low in animal proteins, and only when they're in remission do we start to add back a few of these foods. You can look up methionine-restricted diets. You'll see all kinds of studies on Google, and you can probably look up on YouTube, and they will have methionine-restricted foods. But again, you can go to the government website and look up foods, and then look up the amino acid methionine, and then print out a list of every food you can think of. And they break it down to categories: vegetables, fruits, legumes, grains, almost every single group of food, and they'll break that down based on methionine. And you can print that out and use that, and for especially for those of you that have cancer. I think that's very, very important. I think it's just some of the most important information out there. And that's why I don't support the cancer industry, because they're really not interested in preventing or alleviating cancer. The drug companies are interested in customers. They're interested in profits. So I do as much as possible to give you really good, high-grade, accurate information. 2 major articles that came out on vitamin C. And you know how so many times vitamin C has been, in essence, shown not to work. And they've said that, oh, even though you take vitamin C for the flu or for the cold or for cancer, it really doesn't work. And so anyway, a new study that has come out confirms that taking large doses of vitamin C can significantly reduce the duration of the common cold and the flu. And the researchers from the University of Helsinki, they said you have to take up to 6 to 8 grams per day. And this was published in the scientific journal Nutrients, And they showed that the previous studies where you were taking, 200 to 400 or 600 milligrams of vitamin C, well, they showed that those studies almost were designed on purpose to show that vitamin C did not work. So the new studies done by the University of Helsinki, and again, it's published in the scientific journal Nutrients, acknowledge that while previous research on the relationship between vitamin C and the colds have been extensive, studies were based on incredibly small amounts. Less than 1 gram or 1 gram only. And they found that it's the higher doses, at least 6 to 8 grams spread out during the day, that are needed. Now, in vitamin C cancer research, you're going to see that they do is an IV drip, and the IV drip can be up to 25,000 milligrams or 25 grams, even 50 grams, even sometimes up to 100 grams. And when you do it IV, you don't get the gastrointestinal effects, you don't get the diarrhea or anything like that. It's very difficult to take vitamin C in high doses without getting some of the side effects. So I use Nature's Sunshine vitamin C, the time release. It's the only time release that I use because it's a 1,000 milligram pill, and taking two of those 3 times a day, that's or even two of those 4 times a day, that's 8 grams, but it releases very slowly over a 24-hour period, and it's a full-spectrum vitamin C, so it has all of the bioflavonoids. Again, the newest research is that it showed that the vitamin C was very low doses, and that's why the studies didn't work. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, Natural Solutions Radio, and we'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
Good morning, and thank you for joining me here at Natural Solutions Radio. We're going to be having, Chemical Warfare on America, George Orville, but he's going to be on and talking about the book. It really is a very high-grade book on what's going on with food and chemicals in America. George, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr.
I love
you for the welcome.
Oh, yes. Okay, let me just give a little about that. And I suggest this book. It's a very comprehensive 400-page reference library about chemicals and what's happening. The result of this book is his investigations on fluoride, on aspartame, on artificial sweeteners, chemtrails, MSG, pesticides, herbicides, insecticides, and health hazards, vaccinations, all kinds of things. And when you go to the book, he starts off with the human body and what's happening and how it works, which is extremely important, and then starts off very effectively about what toxins do to the brain. And he talks about fluorine, and we're going to go into some of the studies. He goes into the endocrine system and what happens to all these chemicals, and also artificial sweetener, Gulf War syndrome. So when you look at the table of contents, it's very, very comprehensive. Chemtrails, GMO, MSG, pesticides, vaccinations. And so let's start. George, give a little background of yourself, and how did you get into this, and how do you come to write this book?
Well, I would like to mention that I was a former employee of Federal Food and Drug Administration in the mid-60s, when that federal organization was a very strong watchdog for our consumer health. And I'm sorry, this is no longer true, because I believe in the 1970s, a lot of these districts were closed There used to be 10 of them. Now everything is handled through Washington, where it is infiltrated by executives that come from the private sector who are only interested in their profit margin. And since I retired, I was quite interested in following health concerns, and I started doing a lot of research on the internet, which is a wealth of information if somebody wants to go ahead and do that. So during my investigations on so many different health concerns, I decided to write a book initially titled Silent Killers, but later changing it to Chemical Warfare on America. I picked 5 to 6 main topics of chemicals affecting our health. My first silent killer is the element fluoride that is added to about 65% of municipal water treatments in the United States. It has a very interesting history because it is connected to the development of the atomic bomb. Very interesting article. I will just mention some of the derogatory health effects on our health. Mainly, does not do anything to minimize the cavities in our teeth, but destroys our glandular system, mainly the thyroid hormones, to have a very negative effect on our metabolism. And I believe if somebody would do this study thoroughly, I think diabetes had a good start with it. Or weight gain also.
Absolutely. I've also talked about fluoride and how it depletes iodine in the thyroid. And sometimes, you know, you have to question what is it that the FDA is doing, because is it promoting health, or is it promoting things that make customers for the drug companies and customers for hospitals? You know, it's a terrible thing to think of, but yet when you do some of these studies, you're so correct. And again, this is a very comprehensive book. So for those of you, especially kids, if you're in high school or in junior college or in college, this is the kind of book that you need to give you references and information where you can really write your reports on that. So next to fluorine, what did you find?
Well, the other thing I would like to mention about fluorine, it was used as a dumbing down agent by Nazi Germany in the mid-1930s and in their concentration camps. Okay.
So think of that. It was used to cause apathy in populations. And then the other thing that I know that it caused, it would cause periodic enragement in certain individuals. That's like where people go postal and shoot up something. And here we have all these shootings around the United States as an example. And you have to question, is it the chemicals? Is it all of these chemicals that people are being exposed to? On the one hand, they're very apathetic politically, but then on the other hand, they go apoplectic and shoot up all kinds of things. And then what happens? Of course, the general population demands more and more gun control. Sometimes you have to question, what is it that's going on here? So very, very astute.
My second chemical I chose was the artificial sweetener aspartame, under such commercial names as NutraSweet equals Spoonful, Benevia, and so forth. And this is what some people described it as: an acute toxicity reaction occurs within 48 hours of product containing aspartame in some individuals. Chronic effect occurs anywhere from several days to a number of years. Example, Michael Fox, who was the spokesman for Diet Pepsi. Okay, another example would be Annette Funicello. Potential toxicity effects are almost nearly impossible to link to aspartame by the users. FDA listed initially adverse effects on multiple organs like eye, ear, neurologic, psychological, chest, gastrointestinal, endocrine, etc. But after they reached over 3,000 in a very short time, they discontinued that. I have all those statistics in the book. It was also a lie. It was approved by a Dr. Hayes, a Monsanto executive named as FDA director, who knowingly approved it against the findings of his own FDA health officials. So here again, fluoride was a lie, aspartame is a lie. Okay, my third silent killer is chemtrails. These are white trails after jet airplanes that fly about 30 to 32,000 feet high. Now, the difference between a chemtrail and a contrail. Contrail means concentration trail. And concentration trail, that means water vapor, but it dissipates within a very short distance. Chemtrails do not. They expand and forming quite a cloud cover. And I think a lot of people can see that here in El Paso.
Oh, yes.
A lot of chemtrails.
We actually have that. Sometimes you're seeing El Paso on a clear day. There's all of these jets flying, and the entire sky is crisscrossed with these chemtrails, and then they slowly dissipate, and they don't disappear. Is what ends up happening is they all blend together until it looks like this huge cloud cover, and then actually people have been finding that this stuff comes down, and they get a residue on their cars, and you can actually take your hand and scrape it off. And they have done studies, correct, to determine what's in those chemtrails?
Yes, they have. I just will mention a few that aluminum particles, barium, strontium, which is also strontium 90, the radioactive one, cadmium metal particles, plus manufacturing military waste in it, like bacilli, molds, streptococcus, among numerous other waste products. So it's really, really bad because it also contains bacteria, and there's also some fibers and so forth. So it is very, very nasty. And I believe there was also a mention that some of the respiratory diseases increase under heavy spraying. So in the book, I have a report that some outfit did with a pilot who was involved in flying these, and the explanation given to them was to prevent the earth from warming, which is, I would say, another lie, because I think, in my opinion, it is more or less used in weather modification.
Absolutely. And again, it's a 400-page, very comprehensive book with all of the citations. So, again, what was the next thing that you started to look at?
Well, my next item was genetically modified food, which I believe, Dr. Ben-Joseph, you have mentioned it on numerous occasions on your show. But what I would like to add is that the experimental study done by Professor Seralini in France proved that after a lengthy time of consuming GMO food, the rats in the study had a negative effect and developed tumors. Some of the effects that increased with the increase with GMO food were chronic constipation, gastrointestinal infections, gastrointestinal reflux, and diabetes.
Absolutely.
Presently,
yeah.
90% of our breakfast cereal is produced from GMO corn, rice, soybeans.
This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, Natural Solutions Radio. We'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
And welcome back. I'm with George Orville. The name of the book is Chemical Warfare on America. I want to remind everyone that this is a gentleman that knows what he's talking about. He has degrees in analytical chemistry from Wayne State University. He worked for the Food and Drug Administration in the Detroit District and was part of the FDA, so he knows very intimately what's going on. And this book I knew, because we've talked over the last 3 or 4 years. It's taken a number of years to write Chemical Warfare on America. And we've been talking about some of the things in the book. And again, it is available at Health Naturally. And let's continue. So the GMO foods, which we've talked about, it's rampant now. It's everywhere. All our food seems to be, everything you eat nowadays has some kind of food. George, you know, I looked at when Halloween came around, and you pick up any candy that, you know, is given out to kids, and you look at the ingredient list on these candies, every single one of them, there wasn't one candy that didn't have GMO sugars and GMO products in it.
Well, the thing is, I would like to come up with a summary at the end of my items, but the other thing I would like to mention about GMO, which is never reported by the mainstream news media, is that the GMO seeds have to be bought from Monsanto, and they have to be bought every year by the farmers. They cannot go ahead and use seeds from previous seasons to go ahead and fertilize their fields. But the other thing, too, is that there's in places like India and France, the suicide rate among the farmers has increased because it drove them into bankruptcy. Some of the promised developments of increase more product, it just didn't happen, and they bankrupted themselves. So I think this is a specific somehow a direction in that to more or less acting with the other chemicals is to almost like, in my opinion, to destroy the human race. My next item was the monosodium glutamate, which was like a food taste enhancer. And the interesting part about that one is that it has to be declared when 99% purity of it is used. But when it's less than that, you can use it as an artificial flavor, and it has a whole bunch of different names. It's all identified in the book, so I'm not going to go into a very great discussion on it. I would suggest doing it in the book. But the more important part is the articles on pesticides. Probably people are quite aware of glyphosate right now. And Professor Seralini did another study. It also affects a decrease in the sperm count in the male. Okay, but one of the more interesting one is sulfuric fluoride, a fumigant used in food processing plants. The very interesting thing is that in Europe, in the food processing plants, they will process the food through. No food is left on the shelves. They will fumigate the area, then clear it. And then the first 10% of the processed food is discarded, as opposed to here in the United States, when they use this fumigant, which I believe is used twice a year. The food stays on the shelves. They fumigate the area against the different insects, pesticides, and rodents, and then they just continue with the production. So the European Union, in this respect, watches out for their health quite a bit better than we are. Then, of course, there's also herbicides and different types of pesticides, and it's such a shame because way back in the 60s, when the topic was about DDT and DDE, a lot of it started the EPA organization, but that also has almost gone by the wayside because we have so many numerous pesticides that are being approved left and right without really good, thorough lengthy studies.
And then you recognize that the Environmental Protection Agency was designed to help the public, and instead it seems like their customers are the pesticide industry, the chemical industry, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, so all of these. And again, they've lost. The same with the FDA. The FDA says that their customer is the drug companies and not the public any longer. So, and then also you cover quite a bit about vaccinations. And that's really an important study.
That's my very last topic, Ender, because there was so much written. And I guess now that we have Robert Kennedy Jr. getting involved in it, but apparently they're not listening to whatever his findings are. But this is a very, very bad, nasty thing because, let's face it, our kids are vaccinated with about 54 to potentially 60 different vaccinations by the age 2. Quite often when the doctor says that they miss some vaccinations, they will double up or triple up. And that's very dangerous. And this is primary cause of autism, whether people want to agree to that or not. There's been studies done to that effect. And I'll really tell you one thing. We have a very large control group that proves that vaccination causes autism because the Amish do not vaccinate. They don't have a problem with autism at all. But we do. And now, with the latest HPV vaccination, which is a very, very dangerous one because it affects the health of our young people, and yet it's supposed to be against the papillomavirus, and there's 40 different types that can be sexually transmitted, but in a lot of instances, in 90% of it, it goes away within 2 years. It was not necessary. So it was very interesting to see what a doctor, Sin Hong Lee, stated. And this is what he said. HPV vaccination is unnecessary and potentially dangerous to some recipients. This is the first vaccine invented by the government, patented by the government, approved by the government, regulated by the government and promoted by the government to prevent an already preventable disease, cervical cancer. 30 years down the road, based on using a poorly documented self-reversible surrogate endpoint. The evaluation of vaccine efficacy, a big scientific fraud. There is no cervical cancer epidemic in any developed countries. And this is very interesting because it also leads to some of the other items like viruses that people are trying to develop vaccines for. As an example, I do mention the Ebola outbreak in Western Africa, which is a very, very interesting topic because a lot of mainstream media did not report the full impact of it. That breakout was in what, fall of 2014, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, in 2005, CDC has a patent on that virus. So how come it breaks out in Africa? What is it for? Is it for population control? The other interesting thing is the Department of Defense did some experimental studies to see what is effective to kill it. Well, they determined that the colloidal silver is highly effective in killing that virus. So a manufacturer that manufactures colloidal silver sent about 3,000 of these bottles to Sierra Leone. And guess what happened? The Prime Minister of the United Nations sent a message to the health official in Sierra Leone, and he said, if you use it, we will no longer support you financially.
Exactly. The other thing that's quite unique is that in Africa, where they supposedly found the green monkey It was only about 2 miles away from the actual where they raised green monkeys for their kidneys and for vaccines. Again, there is so much information out there that it's very difficult for the average person to wrap their head around this, because they don't want to believe that their government would be involved in population control or in creating these viruses. As an example, you're talking so much about vaccines, and we have a huge peanut allergy, and we know that peanut oil, which is one of the worst, peanuts are one of the worst allergies for children, is peanut oil is one of the main ingredients in all vaccines. And you mentioned the green monkey kidney, those cells. We also have pig viruses that are in there. We have fetal cells from human abortions into these vaccines. And a lot of the general public did not know that these ingredients are in the vaccines. Now, your book covers all of that. The book is going to be available. It's called Chemical Warfare on America. How did you want to wrap up what you're talking about, George?
Well, what I would like to mention is that all these things that I mentioned is just the tip of an iceberg of all the different chemicals that are present in our environment. And it no longer is being regulated or safety studies performed. Because let's face it, like the flulacine, the EPA lists the safe levels for mercury as 0.2 parts per billion. Yet the flulacine contains 25,000 parts per million of mercury. So,
oh my God, that's
I believe 2 years ago, they even CDC admitted that the flu vaccine is not effective, but yet they told you to take the vaccination. What for?
Exactly.
So you can get poisoned?
Exactly. And actually, they came out with a study that said for the past 35 years, they have chosen the wrong vaccine here in for the United States, that each time, and for 35 years, the vaccine has been very ineffective. And yet it's still promoted pretty strongly by the government. So, again, and they get you both ways, because when you get the vaccine, if you get the flu, they'll say, oh, well, you got wasn't as bad, that you didn't get it as strongly. And if you don't get the flu, they'll say, see, you don't get it. Yet people that eat organic foods that don't flood their body with all of these chemicals seem not to get sick. They don't get the flu. They don't get colds. They don't get any of these. And as an example, more people die from the measles vaccine than get measles in the United States. So
the interesting part regarding the measles vaccine is that the people vaccinated with the measles vaccine can be spreading it up to 9 months.
Right.
I thank you very much for letting me hold this discussion. And let's face it, our medical profession, the way it's organized right now, is to manage the people's savings from those people's pockets to the doctor's pockets to the attorney's pockets, because there's a lot of lawsuits. Nothing is reported that there is a vaccine court or that there's been a lot of damages paid to some of the people who managed to sue the medical profession or the big pharma. This is where all our money goes. This is why the healthcare insurances are so high. We should go back to what Dr. Hippocrates over 2,000 years ago said. Let your food be your medicine, and your medicine your food.
Exactly.
Thank you, Dr. Ben-Joseph.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, Natural Solutions Radio, and we'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
And man. Welcome back. Welcome back. Thank you for joining me here at Natural Solutions Radio. And again, I want to thank George Orville and the Chemical Warfare in America. It was a really good interview. And again, he has degrees in analytical chemistry and worked for the FDA, so he knows what he's talking about. This is the kind of book that you want to have because it covers almost all aspects of the chemical warfare, from our food to pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, vaccinations, GMOs, chemtrails. Talks about the entire endocrine system and what happens to these chemicals. So again, a lot of these chemicals disrupt the hormonal systems in the human body, and it's one of the things that's I think causing extensive sicknesses throughout the United States. And if you look at life expectancy is lowered for the first time in the United States for so many people, and there's so many rampant diseases going on, and so many intense allergies that people are suffering from, especially children with peanut allergies. And you have to question, could it be that all of these chemicals that they're being injected in? Now, when you look at a vaccine and they inject these chemicals directly into your bloodstream, when the average person, how do we get exposed to any kind of toxic material, any kind of virus or bacteria? Usually it's from touching something, and then you touch your nose or you scratch your face, you shake somebody's hand, you open a doorknob, you get use a telephone, all of these things as an example. And so you get exposed, but when the bacteria or virus get in your nose, they're exposed to white blood cells, and those white blood cells actually identify and mark those viruses or vaccines. But at no time in history have we ever been exposed to direct injection. Even when you get a cut or a bruise of any kind where you scrape the skin and bacteria are on the skin, again, the white blood cells go directly to that area and help to heal the area. And so, again, direct injection into a child, I think, is personally malpractice. I do not agree with the whole concept, and there's a huge amount of doctors that agree with us. So, anyway, one of the things that I've been mentioning, again, these hormone disruptors, the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, they're all hormone disruptors. And there was a new groundbreaking study that looks at the regenerative potential of vitamin C for hormone health and cancer prevention. This was a new study that was just published, and the research has been over two decades, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Journal of Radiation, Physics, and Chemistry. And they found that vitamin C can actually provide amazing hormone-balancing benefits and could potentially even prevent cancer. Unsurprisingly, the big pharma corporations, led mainstream media, and the medical establishment have chosen really to ignore these studies' findings. And what they found is that these hormones, whether you're taking progesterone or estrogen or testosterone, they degrade in the human body, and they become what's called hormone transients, and they disrupt the metabolism. Well, they found that taking vitamin C can facilitate almost total regeneration of these hormones, and actually, especially with estrogen and progesterone and testosterones, they can regenerate those, and they don't become what are called these hormone transients, which are very detrimental to the hormonal functions of the body. The profound implications for the use of vitamin C as an alternative to cancer-causing hormone replacement therapy in middle-aged women, and, you know, they all take estrogens, they found that vitamin C can reduce the carcinogenic effect of hormone transients, and that's when someone's normal hormones get used up and become these hormones that are detrimental. So taking extra vitamin C can prevent that and can keep your hormones balanced. That's something to really, what I would say is to take, you know, advantage of. Again, and it's the kind of information you're not going to get at other areas. What do you think of that? What do you think of this information on all of these pesticides and chemicals in our food and all of the GMO toxic foods? Do you think it's important that we know these things, or are we making too big a deal about it? Is it something that the public needs to be aware of so they can make proper choices on the foods they eat, or is it something more that we're just causing a hysteria? I ask those questions and, you know, to see what people are talking about. Oh, Vince. Okay, Vince Garcia. Good morning, Vince. How are you?
Good morning. Your last guest, incredible, you know, talking about all the chemicals and all the things that are in our world that are hurting us, right? I think that's exactly what's hurting us in our world today. You know, I think we've always talked about in the past that, you know, 100 years ago, there weren't very many chemicals. And today there's so many we can't even count or even talk about. But from the food preservatives and the food dyes, what is harming our body? And pesticides, herbicides, of course they're horrible.
You know, especially in children, kids.
I know. I heard you talking about vaccines, and it was horrible.
Right. Peanut oil is in the vaccines. So you have to question this huge peanut allergy that we're having. Is that a possibility that it's coming from these constant injections of this? So, and by the way, Vince is one of our experts on essential oils, and Vince now lives in Utah, but he also was born and raised in El Paso. So again,
absolutely,
I love it when you listen. Just while you're on, there was a brand new article. I think I sent it to you. It was published in the Journal of Herbal Medicine on the effects of frankincense and the Boswellia plant, which is the frankincense tree. And they did a study on people with MS, and they printed this study in the Journal of Herbal Medicine. And they're talking about using frankincense for all kinds of inflammatory diseases. So I know it's something that we really pride ourselves of carrying the best essential oils in the world, and doTERRA, they just process, and they bring out the best essential oils. So I'm sure they're aware of all of these new studies.
Sure, absolutely. And some of the one things, you know, with the neurological system, period, and frankincense, and, you know, of course, I had to talk about copaiba, which is, you know, one of the newer oils from doTERRA. These two oils are the most incredible things for our immune system, for our respiratory and digestive systems, that when we talk about, you know, detoxifying the body, and you guys are talking about earlier, you know, all the chemical compounds that are, you know, damaging our bodies, these essential oils and all of the citrus essential oils are some of the things that we can use to detoxify and get out of our cells, you know, some of these harmful toxins that our body really doesn't know how to digest. And they kind of get stuck in our cellular system.
Absolutely. So,
you know, these essential oils can break through. Yeah, they can break through the walls, help us to detox. You know, we've got to put the good nutrients back in the body. And whether you're going to eat our good nutrients and or have to supplement our nutrients with Lifelong Vitality or Prime Longevity, you know, I use both. I love them both.
And, oh, thank you.
You know, it's just some of the things that we need. Absolutely.
By the way, I just mentioned the copaiba that doTERRA, for people that are concerned of taking a copaiba from the hemp plant where they have to take a drug test and they might test positive, there's no fear of the copaiba from doTERRA. Isn't that correct? That there is no THC.
Correct.
And so they don't have to have a fear of any kind of drug testing.
And let me talk about this one little chemical compound that's in copaiba. It's called, and it's in CBD as well, but it's called beta-chlorophyllyl. And this particular compound, if we measure that out of a lot of the CBD oils that are out there, you know, they do a lot of cutting of these CBDs. So oftentimes we're not getting a very pure CBD. It's about 12 to 15% of this beta-chlorophyllyl that's found in CBD oils. But in doTERRA's copaiba oil that comes from the rainforest and these big old copaiba trees, it is actually 50 to 60% of the chemical compound that's found in copaiba. So it actually helps us even more in the, gosh, the anxious feeling. So if anybody's got the anxious feelings out there, you know, and that comes with depression and a lot of the other ideas that, you know, our body just is we're in panic all the time. This particular oil is one of the stronger ones that I've found that is helping people with those anxious feelings.
And it comes both in these little soft gels and it comes in the oil.
Right.
So someone can take the oil. I take the soft gels all the time, every day, twice a day, actually.
Right, right. Helps us with pain, helps us with, once again, everything in the endocannabinoid system in our body. So just like the respiratory system, digestive system, nervous system, the endocannabinoid system is our healing center of the body. So pretty incredible what this oil does. And, you know, of course, that's why, you know, medical marijuana is such a big deal today.
Oh, yeah.
Because marijuana is helping the endocannabinoid system. And of course, you know, they're always talking about the stronger of all of those is the ones with the THC. But, you know, I mean, it's not always socially acceptable. It's not job friendly.
Correct.
You know, that sort of thing. But this copaiba oil is absolutely something that can help in the same fashion. You know, without the risk.
These CBD oils are really showing anti-cancer properties. The studies on it really quite good. And again, the THC part of it, that's used effectively for people with wasting syndrome. They're losing weight, they're nauseous, they're vomiting, they have chemotherapy. So the THC on that helps them to have an appetite. But nothing is as good as the CBD cannabidiols and the copaiba. I'm really pleased. I take it, and I can really notice a difference. Vince, it's always great to hear from
you. Absolutely.
And there's Vince, again, appreciate it. So this is Eliezer Ben-Joseph. We'll be right back. And again, for those of you that want more information about that frankincense and multiple sclerosis, it was printed in the Journal of Herbal Medicine. So this is Eliezer Ben-Joseph. We'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
And thank you for joining us. We're back here at Natural Solutions Radio. What do you think about all of these chemicals in food? I know there was a comment, they did an experiment with their family, and they started eating, doing the protocols that I've suggested, and adopted a plant-based diet, started taking vitamins and minerals, and even used the Bob Beck protocols, the Gerson therapy, and they no longer get sick. And so I thank you very much for that comment, because that's what happens when people adopt the protocols that I'm talking about. All of a sudden, they don't get sick anymore. And so that's really important. There's actually two articles about chronic stress in the body. And the first article, what stress does to your brain and how stress increases your risk of dementia. And there's 12 things that chronic stress does to your brain. And I've written an entire book on how stress makes you fat, wrinkled, and dead. And so I'm quite familiar on what acute stress does. But this is an article that came out, and that the body, chronic stress produces a lot of cortisol, and this hormone, unlike adrenaline and norepinephrine, stays in the body for long periods of time. And so it's there's acute stress and chronic stress. Acute stress is also known as the fight and flight response, and it's generally harmless, and it can even be beneficial, especially when you're running away from a tiger, okay, because you either run away quickly or you're lunch. But then there's chronic stress that causes this cortisol to constantly be in the body, and this hormone can stay long periods of time, and it's very damaging, especially to the brain. So here are the 12 things that can occur in the brain when you're under chronic stress. Number one is it generates free radicals. Cortisol stimulates an increase in the amount of glutamate produced. And this is a harmful chemical. Glutamate creates free radicals and free radical molecules with unpaired electrons that are highly reactive to other substances. And they can cause cell in your brain, cell nerve cells, and cell membranes, and they can cause these membranes to rupture and the cell dies. And the stuff that's inside the cell that gets into the brain, into the blood system, and can cause all kinds of chemical reactions. Number two is forgetfulness and mood swings. And people who are stressed all the time easily forget things, and you'll go, oh, I just can't think clearly, and oh my gosh, I forgot that. Because the brain signals associated with memory, when you have all these cortisols, are weakened. And when you're under stress, the blood in the front part of your brain leaves, and most of it goes to the back part of your brain. And that's because that's the limbic system and where you need the blood to move and get away. It affects the memory and mood swings. Number three is fear and anxiety. The amygdala, which is part of the brain that's responsible for causing fear, when you're under chronic stress, this brain region is constantly heightened, and because of the increase in the size and number of cell corrections, the amygdala is constantly active, and so you get more fear, more anxiety, and it feeds on itself. Number four is the inhibition of brain cell production. You know, brain cells don't last forever, and eventually they die off, but you can actually replace and get new ones. And there are neurotropic effects responsible for this new brain cells. But what happens under chronic stress, you stop producing these neurotropic effects, and you reduce the number of new brain cells. So it's going to cause problems that lead to depression or obsessive compulsive disorders, schizophrenia, dementia, Alzheimer's, and that's because you're not producing all of the new brain cells. Number five is depression. And again, we just mentioned that under chronic stress, the brain produces less of these neurotransmitters, serotonin and dopamine. And so what happens is serotonin and dopamines are known as the happy molecules and the motivation molecules. When you have reduced levels, that's when you get different types of depression. Number six is increased of mental illness. And again, we're just covering that. Depression, anxiety, fear, all of that from lowered production of serotonin and dopamine. So number seven is impaired cognition. Again, these are similar. The inability to think well. This happens when you're really under that acute or chronic stress. You just don't think well. Number eight is you actually get a smaller brain size. And the presence of constant amounts of cortisol negatively affects the size of the brain. Number 9 is a vulnerability to these neurotoxins. Normally, the brain is vulnerable to toxins, but with the help of the blood-brain barrier, you keep these harmful substances out of the brain. But when people are under chronic stress, that blood-brain barrier becomes easier to penetrate, so harmful substances can enter the brain. And that's where some of these risks of brain cancer and multiple sclerosis or brain infections or Parkinson's or any other things is because that blood-brain barrier becomes permeable. Number 10 is higher risks of, again, dementia and Alzheimer's. People are afraid because, again, it affects all that cortisol, affects the blood supply and the nerve production. Number 11 is the death of brain cells, not just the less production of new ones, but the death of brain cells. Chronic stress shortens the telomeres of cells, which is the protective caps on the end of the chromosomes, which consequently leads to death. And number 12 is brain inflammation. And the brain has its own immune system in the form of microglia cells. And unlike immune cells, microglia cells cannot be turned off once it's been activated. So it continues to create all of these forms of inflammation. So those are the 12 things that happen with stress. Now, the next article that came out on stress, again, this is an article that says the many ways stress make you sick, okay? And again, aside from the flight-fight response, when you're stressed, these hormones, adrenaline and cortisol, are released into the body, and these hormones cause physical and psychological and physiological changes. Rapid heart rate, faster breathing, altered immune response, tense muscles, sweating. So there was numerous studies on that, and these are the health issues that can be caused by stress. Number one is acne, as an example, and most of the time, acne is experienced by teenagers going through puberty, but because they're under higher amounts of stress hormones, even more so than adults. And studies shows that acne conditions of university students typically get worse when they're taking exams and they're under more stress. The next one is headaches. Nearly 60% of working age adults experience headaches, and we can the ones classified as tension type headaches are due to tension brought about muscle contractions in the head and the neck region. Chronic pain, high levels of cortisol released during stress response, and they lead to chronic pain. And then colds and flu, the immune system response is lowered, and the more stressors you have, they can lead to increased susceptibility to respiratory infections such as colds and flu. Fatigue, when you think about all of these stressors in your life, you start to lose sleep over these factors. As a result, you start to feel tired, and extreme causes of stress cause extreme fatigues. Next one, digestive problems, because what happens when you're under a lot of stress, blood leaves your stomach, and the bacteria in your gut are affected by stress, and studies have shown that stress-induced changes in the gut microflora lead to irritable bowel syndrome, autoimmune digestive illnesses. And the last one is changes in appetite. People who experience chronic stress tend to eat under stress, or eat less, or eat more, often eating foods that they think help to reduce their stress, like high sugary foods or chemical-laden foods. And again, what happens is that changes in the appetite occur because when you're under stress, blood leaves the stomach. So what do we do? Some of the best management tips for handling stress. The best that I think is practicing breathing exercises and relaxation exercises. And increasing the length of the exhale is probably one of the most important things that you can do. So it is One of the best also detoxifying effects, increasing the exhale. The next one is confiding in someone, a loved one, or a priest, or a rabbi, or a minister, or a girlfriend, or a boyfriend, or somebody, but in talking about the stressors. And when you talk to somebody that's a good friend and they listen, that's one of the best ways for alleviating stress. The next one that helps to alleviate stress, of course, is exercise. And some of the best exercises are high-intensity intermittent exercise. So whether it's walking or jogging, I don't recommend running. And whether it's walking or, and again, if you do want to run, I recommend walking, jogging, or running done where it's 30 seconds fast and a minute and a half slow. 30 seconds fast and a minute and a half slow. Weightlifting exercises is very, very good for de-stressing. Also, of course, eating a healthier diet. That's going to help de-stress the body. Reducing the amount of alcohol and caffeine, that can help a lot. Again, one or two cups of coffee in the morning is one thing, but drinking caffeine throughout the entire day, even into the early evening, can really disrupt your sleep patterns. It also can disrupt your hormone patterns. Then, learning proper time management skills. That's another thing that to help you de-stress. And again, the most important is finding anything that is effective that's going to help de-stress your body, any of these things that I've talked about. This article came out in the Psychology Today, and again, also in Medical News Today, both of these articles came out. And again, I don't make this stuff up. Next article I want to talk about is the 20 of the most addictive foods. And surprise, surprise, none of them are good for you. Now, we're talking psychological addictions. And on any given day, it may be good, bad, or tiring, exciting, or uneventful. But we're always looking forward to eating some good food because of how badly we crave and depend on these foods. And some experts are now saying it can even be considered an addiction. And a team of researchers from the Department of Psychology at the University of Michigan created a study that focused on some of the most addictive foods, pizza. And they topped the list. Surprisingly, I don't think it's surprising, unsurprisingly. They teamed up with the New York Obesity Research Center at Mount Sinai and St. Luke's Hospital to better understand what foods trigger an addictive response in some people. And they found that food addicts display the same brain patterns as drug addicts. And what they found is that there's loss of control over the amount of consumption, that the continued use despite negative consequences, and ability to cut back on those foods. So even though we might know better, they did neuroimaging studies of these food addicts and drug addicts, and they showed a strikingly similar in their brain patterns. Food addiction showed an increased activation of the reward regions of the brain in response to food cues. So these are much the same as food addictions. And so a lot of these studies, there was another one in University of Michigan. It was published in a two-part study published in the Journal of PLOS-1. And it involved over 120 undergraduate students and their food intake. And so these 20 most addictive foods, now some of them I think might actually be, or at least one of them I'm looking right now, might be okay, and actually the last two. But pizza was number one. Number two was chocolate. Now, I think chocolate, as an example, especially if it's dark chocolate with low sugar, can be very healthy. But most people are eating milk chocolate and just chocolate. Then the next one was chips of all different forms. The next one was cookies, all kinds of different cookies from, but again, mostly the cookies that people buy over the counter. You know, what's the cookie, the black with the Oreos.
Chips Ahoy.
And Oreos and those kinds of things. Then ice cream was next, then French fries, cheeseburgers, non-diet sodas, cakes of all kinds, eating cheese. Now, some cheeses are better than others. And again, I think if you stay with things like Edam or Gouda or Swiss cheese or feta cheese, those are actually better cheeses for you. The next food on there that they said was pretty is bacon. And boy, do you see bacon advertised everywhere. Bacon, bacon, bacon. The next one was fried chicken. The next were white rolls. And, you know, you go to restaurants and everybody wants that hot white roll with butter on it, even though it has no nutritional value. Yeah. The next was buttered popcorn from packages. And that kind of buttered popcorn is not healthy at all. Making your own popcorn, that would be a different thing. Cereals, breakfast cereals, especially the high sugar breakfast cereals. Gummy bears was next. Eating a big steak, especially seared steak on the grill. And again, you have to be careful of that seared part. Then muffins, again, all of these, and some of these muffins are huge with huge amount of calories. One muffin might have 2,200 calories on it. Now, the last two, I think, can be healthy, and that's nuts and eggs, especially nuts like walnuts and pecans and sunflower seeds and almonds and the raw nuts, not the roasted and salted, but the raw nuts and seeds. And the last one, eggs. And I think if you're eating omega-3 eggs, and again, depending upon what condition you have, whether you have an allergy to eggs, omega-3 eggs can be quite healthy. And again, especially for children going to school, I think a fat and protein, eggs for breakfast with some sliced avocado on the side are a great way to start a breakfast for kids. They need that fat and protein. And they can take raw walnuts and almonds with them as a snack. So this is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, and we'll be right back.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.
There was a great article, and this one is on something that people just aren't familiar with. I talk about it all of the time. But for years now, many of us who advocate natural health and natural approaches to treating cancer have warned against the dangers and the ineffectiveness of chemotherapy. Well, there was a big report, and it was presented at the 27th annual in San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, a paper on how chemotherapy actually spreads cancer cells, as well as points out how very little we are being told about the dangers of chemotherapy. And according to this new study, chemotherapy does not cure and often inflicts more damage and spreads cancer. German investigators from the university in Jena have shown that Taxol, which is the gold standard of chemotherapy, causes a massive release of cancer cells into circulation. Now, such a release of cancer cells might result in extensive metastases months or even years later, long after the chemotherapy would be suspected as the cause of the spread of the cancer. And this little-known horror of conventional cancer treatment needs to be spread far and wide, and it's not even listed in the side effects of Taxol. As I've stated many, many times, chemotherapy is not a cure for cancer. It merely attempts to eliminate the tumors and cancer cells that are symptoms of an underlying cause of cancer. Cancer is a symptom, and it does so with actually very little success and great risk, especially for any kind of metastasized cancer. And certain cancers just are, don't do well at all, pancreatic cancers and liver cancers and lung cancers. There are some new promising effective treatments for cancer, but it's not chemotherapy. It's called immunotherapy. That's where they take white blood cells from your own body and they actually expose them to cancer cells, your cancer cells, and they teach those white blood cells that the cancer cells are not healthy and should not be there. And then they cause those white blood cells to divide, and then they'll re-inject those white blood cells into your body, and they have trained those white blood cells then to go after the chemotherapy. Now, that's being studied, and it's actually showing some great effectiveness in cancer. I don't know how much it's going to be utilized, because do drug companies want customers, or do they want cures? Well, chemo does not cure cancer. It does put you at a great risk, though. In some instances, it appears to eliminate tumors and cancer cells masses, though often it also destroys the healthy cells. But then years later, because those cancer cells escaped into the rest of the body in the process, that's when years later the cancers come back, and those cancer cells are much more resistant to chemotherapy. And so the spreading of cancer cells, chemo inflicts serious and perhaps irreversible damage to the immune system, and particularly liver cancers and ovarian cancers and cervical cancers and lung cancers. So for those of you that want to prevent cancer or have cancer or have a family history of cancer, you want to do a low methionine, the essential amino acid methionine, a low methionine diet, because cancer cells really need methionine. So you can get that information from the government. They produce, print all kinds of pages of statistics and foods with how much every nutrient, and you can go to the government Food and Drug Administration and look up the amino acid methionine and get a complete list of every different food, and you can have it print out from the lowest to the highest, and you would just start avoiding all the high foods. And I say over 55 or 60. You would want to stay at below that when you start looking at them. A next article that looked really quite nice are for those that don't like to meditate, or they have trouble meditating. They have trouble using their mind and how they get just attempt to meditate. Well, there's another form of meditation, and it's called joyful grounding. And, you know, meditation isn't for everybody. But relaxation methods are popular, and they are really indeed available for everybody. Well, there's another method that suits their personality, such as joyful grounding. Now, meditation can help achieve inner peace and a sense of calm, and it can make others very fidgety and anxious, especially when they don't know how to do it properly. Instead of meditation, Dr. Marcia Reynolds, author. She's an author and the doctor of psychology. She talks about the practices of joyful grounding as an alternative that brings peace of mind and a state of effective joy. Now, grounding refers to the physical connection between the electrical frequencies of the human body and of the earth. So this form of meditation can lead you to focus your mind on the present. So what you can do is like at sunrise or at sunset, you go outside, sit down on the, put a chair on the grass, put your bare feet on the grass, and just sit and listen to the sounds of nature. That is a very relaxing way to do that. And breathing becomes a very, you know, you slow your breathing down. This is a great way of including a meditation into your diet. The opinions and views expressed on Natural Solutions Radio are not endorsed by Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, or any other social media outlet. Most of the therapeutic modalities mentioned on Natural Solutions Radio show are not recognized by standard allopathic medicine and are not endorsed by the American Medical Association or FDA. Okay, join us again next week, and I want to thank you all for joining us. This is Eliezer Ben-Joseph, and we're signing off.
Health Naturally is the best apothecary in town for all your supplement needs. We here at Health Naturally believe in the natural approach to your health and wellness. About supplements for your specific health concerns and needs, be sure to call us at 915-833-0222 for your questions and comments, or come and visit us at 7040 North Mesa, El Paso, Texas. Remember, call 915-833-0222. Know that prevention is the best alternative to a cure.